Hello and welcome into Fantasy Focus Football. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. It is Friday, August 18th, 19th. Friday, August 19th.
I don't know what day it is.
My name is Daniel Dopp. I am joined here by Field Yates. We are closing out a heck of a week here within ESPN Fantasy.
Yeah, totally. People have a lot to be proud of in these parts. It has been the marathon week. We saw record signups, nearly 2 million people drafted a team. Yep. So much content, so much exposure for some of the new faces or newer faces. That's to right. ESPN. Liz Loza joined us on the podcast earlier this week. Eric Moody joins on the podcast earlier this week for the second time in his ESPN career. So congrats to all involved. Really proud to be on this team, Dan. It's been a lot of fun this week.
It's been a ton of fun. We have no Mike Clay, no Stefania. Stefania's out doing training camps. Like, she's working hard. You know how Stefania does.
I'm in Montego Bay.
Yeah. I don't know where Mike's at, if I'm honest. I don't know why Mike's
in his pool.
Oh, is that? Oh, he must be. Yeah. He must be in his pool.
Nice out today.
I went over to Mike's house yesterday. You know what I made him do?
Up downs.
I made him watch Hard Knocks.
Oh,
it was the fourth time I've watched Hard Knocks so far this week.
You might have a problem.
I might. All right, let's talk about some news, Field.
Let's do it.
Yep. Let's get into it. All right. Yesterday, you broke some news on the show, and we're going to get into it more throughout the offseason. But I think the big thing to cover, Deshaun Watson's suspension extends from 6 games to 11 games. And we can cover more of that later. But how is this specifically going to affect the Browns offense and the skill position players for the fantasy positions?
All right, so let's go through the skill guys. I can quickly tell you that there's no need to draft Deshaun Watson in a draft right now, separate and apart from whether your moral compass would even allow you to do so. He's going to miss 11 games, 12 weeks in total because of the bye in there as well. There are too many good quarterback options.
Agreed.
I think people are wondering about two players, Nick Chubb and Amari Cooper. I can be succinct here on Nick Chubb. I don't think it matters that much, Daniel. While the Browns offense is going to be less efficient and you might have slightly fewer opportunities for him to find the end zone, still Nick Chubb, one of the best pure runners in the NFL behind a very good offensive line. And in games in which the Browns are able to stay afloat, and if you look at their early season schedule, the first 4 games look, I would argue, winnable without Deshaun Watson. I think Nick Chubb's going to be able to get his customary 20 or so rushes in a game and be where he is, which is a mid-tier RB2.
That focus on ball control kind of football, assuming.
Yeah, just play good defense and run the football a ton. Like, great offensive line. And yep. Heck, Nick Chubb has played with, at times, not great quarterback play over the first 4 seasons of his career. He's got 3 straight years with at least 1,000 rushing yards. Don't overthink it too much with Nick Chubb. Amari Cooper becomes a little bit more interesting. And he has to be moved down just a few spots in your rankings after what happened yesterday news-wise. Not that we were expecting Deshaun Watson to be available for the full season, but we didn't know whether it would be 6 games or we thought more, but we weren't sure exactly how many more.
You're basically doubling his suspension, right?
Yeah, you're basically doubling his suspension, and Amari Cooper is now going to be, for the first 2/3 of the fantasy season, weeks 1 through 12, going to be playing with Jacoby Brissett. And this just in, Jacoby Brissett's not nearly the player that Deshaun Watson is. And if you look over Jacoby Brissett's career, he started 37 games. He has 36 total touchdown passes, not in those starts, in other games in which he appeared as a backup or a fill-in as well. Yeah. The offense is just not going to be high octane through the air. It's hard to find a perfect analog for Amari Cooper, but if you look back to last season, Jacoby Brissett started, and the Dolphins' number one wide receiver, Jalen Waddle, is sort of following the model that I'm describing. He got plenty of volume. He had 8 targets in those 5 starts, 5.8 catches, 53.2 yards. That's fine. That's nearly a little over 11 fantasy points per game. Problem was, he had 0 touchdowns. Yeah. 0 in those 5 starts that Jacoby Brissett made for the Dolphins last year. So I think, given the now inconsistent resume of Amari Cooper, multiplied by the fact that touchdown equity just went down, I think Amari Cooper slides closer to wide receiver 30 as opposed to wide receiver 20. If he had Deshaun Watson for the full season or even half of it, he might have been able to be justified. I mean, certainly if he had Deshaun Watson for the entirety of it, he might be a top 15 wideout.
Absolutely. And now, with that being said, knowing that those two guys are the guys, what about some of those auxiliary pass catchers? David Njoku, Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell, late round flyers for people. Is it just based on what this offense is going to be? Is the goal take your flyers from another team.
I think so. And I think if I'm looking at those late round flyers, I'm just going to go target an offense that we think is going to score a whole bunch more points and touchdowns, right? Yep. You go find whether you think the Packers are going to be really good on offense this year. And you said, I'd rather take a Romeo Doubs versus a Donovan Peoples-Jones. And whether you think that there is somebody that's going to emerge that we haven't talked about enough.
KJ Osborne from the Vikings, if anything happens.
KJ Osborne, or whether you think someone in Kansas City is going to emerge, sure. Whether you think that Josh Palmer is going to be a useful third receiver for the Chargers. There are a lot of examples of guys that could be really good. Isaiah McKenzie for the Buffalo Bills stepping into bigger roles this year that I think I would pivot elsewhere. The touchdown upside is just there's a large enough sample size to know that it's suppressed. The Browns are probably going to be closer to like 20 points per game as an offense than 30.
Yeah.
As a result of that, all the pass catchers just went down in value.
Yep. All right. Today's a big show with just you and I, Field. We're doing Double Trouble. Colts
here we are.
And Jaguars. Let's get into it. Double trouble. As of this moment, they're on double secret probation. And if you're watching the live stream, you see on your screen the list of Colts and Jaguars we will be talking today. Let's start with Matt Ryan, Field. Here's the good thing. He's thrown for 4,500 yards in seven of the last 10 seasons.
Yep.
That's great. But he's just not the same Matt Ryan that he was with the Falcons. Do you think that he would ever appear in your 10 or 12 team lineups as a starter for you?
I'd be surprised. Maybe during one of those weeks where we have like six or seven teams. I think there's 2 weeks, 9 and 14, yeah, where there are six teams on a bye. Yep. If things go right and the matchup is correct for Matt Ryan, possibly.
That would be it.
That would probably be the only circumstance. As we know, we can establish that Matt Ryan is a passing quarterback only. He has never rushed for more than 147 yards in a single season in his career. I think people knew that, but just to underscore how little of a rushing threat he is, back-to-back years under 100 rushing yards, by the way, over the past two seasons.
Yeah.
A little more turnover prone than you might realize. Over the past 4 years, Matt Ryan has 61 turnovers, 44 interceptions, 17 fumbles lost. Now, maybe the change of the Colts offense will change that a little bit because it's an offense that has a better offensive line and maybe more run-focused. But that means that he's also going to be throwing it a lot less.
Yeah.
Last year, the Colts ranked in the bottom six in terms of total passing attempts, fifth in total rushing attempts. Frank Reich recently made some comments suggesting that the team couldn't just ground and pound its way to a championship. He said that's just not the way that you win. And that might be more relevant to the Jonathan Taylor conversation. But I don't think they're going to start throwing it, 40 times a game with Matt Ryan. And he's certainly played with some really good receivers, right? Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley being an incredible 1-2 tandem at the height of their time together. And he doesn't have that in Indianapolis. Michael Pittman, we're going to talk about it just a little bit. He's a really good player. Beyond that, we're still looking for that second pass catcher we can count on. So no, I don't believe that Matt Ryan is primed for a big fantasy season this year.
Yeah, that's fair.
Solid player. I mean, he's really good. Better football player in real life than he is in fantasy.
Yeah, but he just doesn't have standalone value right now in our redraft leagues that we'll be playing. But
I've got him 25th on my quarterback board for some perspective.
Low. Okay, yeah. That's fair. As a part of that, though, you look at Michael Pittman, and we talked about him. He's had seven finishes inside the top 20 of wide receivers last year. Now going from Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan, how much is Matt Ryan going to potentially impact and increase what Michael Pittman can do in this offense?
So I think it helps, but I think what else helps is the fact that Michael Pittman's going into his third year and just getting better, like reaching that prime of his career. That's what I think is the most important reason why I'm so optimistic about Michael Pittman, who checks in as ESPN's 14th ranked receiver. He was 17th in the NFL in catches last season with 88. He was 16th in targets, 129, 18th in receiving yards at 1,082. And I'm expecting this guy to make a leap this year. I think Matt Ryan, just generally speaking, a more accurate quarterback. And sometimes when I'm talking about accuracy, it's not just accuracy in terms of completion percentage. It's about putting the ball on the money. I think Matt Ryan is a better, more accurate quarterback as compared to Carson Wentz. I just referenced how the team might throw the football a little bit more this year, which can help Michael Pittman Jr. He had 9 games last year, though, with 7 or more targets. So over half of the time that they played last year, he was getting at least 7 targets, which to me is a pretty clear runway to be an elite wide receiver. And then, as we know, and we're going to talk about it again, and I'll say it one more time, it's still not like there's a bunch of other pass catchers that seem destined to steal work from Michael Pittman Jr. The sky is the limit might be too strong of a characterization, but Michael Pittman, huge bodied receiver, really good in the red zone, fast, high character, cares about it, like wants to be great. All of these things help me feel confident that he is about to be a different player in year 3 than he was in year 2.
Hey,
I love him.
fingers crossed, because with where he's going, I would love to be able to have him. We talked about top 20 in a bunch of different categories last year, and with Matt Ryan being able to take that next step. I am hoping with that, that one of the pass catchers that we got this year in the draft, Alec Pierce, can be able to help Michael Pittman a little bit more. Maybe Paris Campbell can stay healthy, or Mo Ali Cox can add a little bit to this. But I'm curious. Oh, dang it. I said I'm curious.
It's okay.
But I want to know from you, Field Yates, do any of these other pass catchers, Pierce, Paris Campbell, Mo Ali Cox, do they move the needle from you? Are you taking any late round flyers on them?
Alec Pierce is the one that I have my eyes on here. For those that are unacquainted with Alec Pierce, this is a guy who is a second round pick out of Cincinnati, was a really good player for Desmond Ridder last year, perhaps their best skill position player on offense other than Ridder. They had that run to the college football playoff. Really great team. At the combine, measured in at 6'3", 211 pounds. He ran a 4.33 40. The dude can absolutely blaze. He's got incredible speed, really good on the perimeter, really good in contested catches, which Michael Pittman is as well, but always good to have two of a really valuable commodity. And all the way back on May 16th, our friend Lewis Riddick, who plays in the War Room League and is a big fantasy guy, but more importantly, studies, knows what he's talking about, and when he talks, we listen, tweeted a picture of Alec Pierce and used the hashtag O-R-O-Y, as in Offensive Rookie of the Year. Lewis was bullish on him during the pre-draft process. He goes to a team that we know has a very capable quarterback. They're not going to throw it a ton, but we haven't seen a second wide receiver breakout in Indianapolis for a few years now.
Yeah.
T.Y. Hilton was the man for a while, and we were always yearning for that next great pass catcher. Michael Pittman started to get there, and then he overtook T.Y. Hilton. It's been a while since two of them were really fantasy relevant in the same season. I'm not saying Alec Pierce is going to check that box, but Alec Pierce, really talented guy, another player that if you're in the 14th, 15th, 16th round, I'd have my eyes on. And if he goes undrafted and you do some sort of waiver run before the season begins, take a look at your roster and see maybe there's somebody that you either felt skittish about drafting in the first place. Somebody gets hurt. You have an IR spot available. I think Alec Pierce is a worthwhile name to keep an eye on.
On Wednesday, Stefan, you texted me from joint practices with the Colts and Lions and said, is now a good time to tell you I just saw Matt Ryan connect with the rookie Alec Pierce in order to beat the Lions defensive back for a touchdown?
Wow.
Which I felt like the answer was no, it was not the right time to be able to do that. However, I'm in. I like Alec Pierce is a guy that I know that we're all really excited about, but late round flyer, right? That offense is looking for a number two wide receiver behind Michael Pittman, someone to be able to carve out a role. I don't think that it's Paris Campbell. And I think we talked about earlier, we're not going to take a flyer on Browns, right? Donovan Peoples-Jones, those guys. Alec Pierce is the kind of guy to take a flyer on, like you just said.
Yeah, there are a couple guys that are going to make contributions for the Colts. Ashton Doolin, you may have mentioned Paris Campbell, who's been hurt far too frequently, but if I had to sort of stick my neck out for one Colts pass catcher not named Michael Pittman, it would be Alec Pierce. And I know there has been some who believe that Mo Ali Cox is in for a bigger role this year. Jack Doyle retired this offseason. Mo Ali Cox got a real deal to return to Indianapolis, like 3 years, $18 million.
Did they sign tight end? Then they draft Jelani Woods?
They did draft Jelani Woods out of Virginia in the fourth round. They drafted another tight end, recently tore his ACL. Was having a really good camp, so a bummer to see that. But to your point, Daniel, they've got a lot of tight ends there. They also, like last year, Mo Ali Cox had more games with zero catches. Yeah. He had four of those than five targets. He had just two of those. So Mo Ali Cox, really useful. Like, he's a good finisher for them, like good in the red zone. He might have five or six touchdown catches this upcoming season. Good blocking tight end as well. Good character kid, but I think you can pass. There are other options at tight end that present much more upside.
Definitely. I think he's more of a DFS play, given the fact that you're looking for that once a week. Maybe a big touchdown here, and he's always a really cheap salary. And if you're into DFS, check us out, CSS DFS.
That's coming back this
football
year?
Football season long. That's right. Me, Mike Clay, Al Zeidenfeld.
Go. What day of the week? Do you know?
Money. We're not sure. Thursday, okay. Friday?
Figure it out.
We're going to figure it out.
Gotcha.
Let's talk about Jonathan Taylor.
Actually, shall we?
To be honest, with Mike not being here, I think David, did he? Yeah. So Mike sent in a video,
what?
I think, for us about Jonathan Taylor.
He sent a video in? That.
Yeah, he sent a video in about Jonathan Taylor.
From where?
Hot take. Jonathan Taylor, really good at football. Draft him with the first pick.
Wait, Mike Clay just said that on camera?
Apparently.
Like on streaming national
TV from his
television?
Pool. Yeah.
He went out on a limb.
Yeah.
And just said that Jonathan Taylor is good at football and to draft him first overall.
1.01.
Wow. Okay. I have to reconsider some things in my life right now. Yeah. For those that are only listening to the audio podcast, if you have the chance to go watch the video clip, I would encourage you to do it. Another reason why Mike Clay, such a legend.
You're right.
Love that he buys in on everything. And Mike Clay's pool looks pretty sweet.
It does. And if you've never seen Mike Clay without his shirt on,
this is your opportunity to do so.
We
have seen a lot of shirtless Mike Clay recently.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. You know what? I told Mike that, you know, Manscaped was a former, partner of the show.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you could do a little bit, you know, in the chest.
That might motivate them to come back.
Maybe.
All so right, let's talk do about you want to, yeah, I'll just give you the quick rundown on Jonathan Taylor. I know we've talked about him a ton. I know we will again, but just for those out there that are just wondering, you know, if they're having any consternation over the first overall pick, and the general sense that I've gotten so far is that there hasn't been any, just a reminder of how brilliant this guy is. Last year, despite in the first 4 weeks of the season, as Mike recently told us, playing just 50% of the snaps, he finished the season with the NFL lead in rushes, the NFL lead in rushing yards, the NFL lead in rushing touchdowns, 40 catches. He had more 20-plus yard runs than anybody else in the NFL. He had this ridiculous stretch from weeks 4 to 15 that the next closest running back was 61.5 points behind. Adds enough in the passing game that there's a steady floor there. And if that passing game role flourishes, then he could start to become part of the conversation that Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey have been in the center of over the past couple of years. The guys who, even if you take them one or two overall, which generally we tell you, you don't win your league in the first round, but you can lose it.
Lose it. Yep.
Jonathan Taylor could be that guy that becomes a league winner if he also gets more passing game upside, because the ceiling for him would then be like 25, 27 points per game.
Yeah. I think his ceiling would be the floor. For some other people from that standpoint, is that how the roof is the floor.
Ceiling is the roof.
Ceiling is the roof.
Yeah.
So Michael Jordan.
That was Michael Jordan. You know, I always feel like a little weird when you say something negative about Michael Jordan at all. Just like, I don't know how.
As a Pistons fan?
No. I'm saying not you, Daniel, like you general, like you, the person who's speaking ill about Michael Jordan, because I don't know how it's going to come back around at me, but it will in life.
Sooner or later.
Right? Like, I'll drive home with a flat tire, or I don't know, like I'll lose my wallet again, which I did like 3 days ago. Something's going to happen to me if I speak ill of Michael Jordan. Bad. Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's where we're at with Jonathan Taylor. There's no reason to talk bad about Jonathan Taylor. The dude is a beast. And he started out slow last year, by the way, like the first couple of weeks, I think you said the other day.
He was split the first, time. First four weeks were split. Like, I'll hear the reasonable argument to take somebody else. Like, I have Jonathan Taylor first on my big board. I am open to the idea of taking Christian McCaffrey. A lot of people say that I am completely nuts for that. But I just think that if you have the first overall pick, generally speaking, you want to achieve two things: close to maximum ceiling and close to maximum floor. And I think that Jonathan Taylor, who's never missed a game in his career, has held up incredibly. I think definitely has a chance to represent both the highest ceiling and highest floor.
Okay, so you talked about being able to add pass catching abilities to his game. Not that he's not a good pass catcher, but he's got someone named Nyheim Hines in the backfield with him. 40 catches in all four of his NFL seasons. And last year, in spite of running 81 fewer routes, 81, he still had five more targets than Jonathan Taylor. And I think that's the rub right here when you're talking about adding to that pass catching game. Yeah. However, that still gives Nyheim Hines some standalone value as potentially a bye week fill-in or a guy that you could look at as a flex position if you needed later on in the season.
Maybe if you're a mentalist. Because here's the reason why. I'm going to open up Nyheim Hines' game log just so I can point this out more accurately.
Oh, I'm
is
so
that
ready
like
for this.
It just depends on like how lucky do you feel when you play Nyheim Hines, right? Because you remember last year, by the way, Nyheim Hines rules. The guy's awesome. He's so good. Like he's extremely well paid by the Colts for a very good reason. But let's just take a look. As we go through his game log last year, remember last year, week one, very first week of the season? Was it week one last year? I thought it was week one last. Maybe it was week one 2 years.
I'm going to look
but
it up.
But here are the catches for Nyheim Hines last season. 6, 1, 5, 2, 0, 1, 1, 4, 4, 2, 0. And we can keep going on and on and on. The point is that if you're going to get Nyheim Hines into your lineup, it has to be in a week in which you can count on those catches coming, and based off of last season and years prior to that, it's hard to predict which those weeks will be. Useful player to have on the bench. Obviously, if something happened to Jonathan Taylor, which we don't even want to think of, then I think Nyheim Hines' value would crawl up a little bit. But I do think there are other guys in that tier, in that territory, that are probably better bets to get consistent passing game work that I would prefer to Nyheim Hines. Guys like J.D. McKissic, guys like Michael Carter, as two examples that come to mind.
Interesting. I find that interesting.
Sure.
I think
you feel differently?
I think I kind of do, which is tough because you're not wrong about this. Part of me wants to see the next step that Nyheim Hines can take in this offense. And Frank Reich, you've said all offseason, we're taking everything with a grain of salt. Frank Reich said Nyheim Hines is going to catch the ball a lot this year, earlier in the offseason. But J.D. McKissic's not in a great offense. I don't really love that. I think when you look at Michael Carter, they just signed Breece Hall. Again, not a great offense. I think I would rather have Nyheim Hines than either one of those two guys. But to your point, you need to see it more consistently. It's really going to be tough to say I can count on him here in week 7 because I haven't seen that consistency last year. To your point, it was not as much as you would
want. I just think the counter to that is both J.D. McKissic and Michael Carter play on teams that are more likely to be playing from behind consistently. So I would forecast that J.D. McKissic might end up getting 4 or 5 targets a game because the Commanders aren't very good. The Colts, I do think, are pretty good, and they can ground control you even if they don't want to do it as much as last year.
So to your point, Caesars has them with a win total of 10 wins field. And you're right, from 10 wins, you're assuming they're not playing from behind very much. Maybe I need to rethink the way I'm thinking about Nyheim Hines with that. But where are you at, over or under on 10 wins here?
I've got him at 10.24 wins specifically. 10.243 repeating, actually. Okay. No, I'm going a little over 10 wins. How about you?
I'm going under 10 wins.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're pessimistic on the division as a whole?
Pessimistic on the division as a whole, okay. And I am pessimistic on the idea that Matt Ryan comes over and is able to, in his first year here in Indy, just run a 10-win team.
Okay. I mean, they won 10 games last year with Carson Wentz, who was okay. He wasn't great, but 26 touchdowns, 6 picks. I think they take a step up this year and win that division as well. We're going to come back and discuss the Jaguars, a team that could be trending up. But before we do that, Geico wants to know, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Duh, you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. It can even help with homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
Football fans, join the next generation of fantasy football with Rainmakers Football, their first ever NFT fantasy game from DraftKings. It's the only NFT fantasy game licensed by the NFLPA, and now you can play all season for millions in prizes by building the ultimate NFT franchise. Right now, everyone can get their first full roster starter pack for free. Playing Rainmakers is simple. You buy, sell, bid, and win player card NFTs of the biggest names in the game through regular drops and auctions on DraftKings Marketplace. Then you craft your lineups of athletes from your NFT collection and earn points for touchdowns, receptions, and more, just like you do in Daily Fantasy. Build your NFT franchise and enter free Rainmakers football contests all season long to compete for millions in prizes. So the next generation of fantasy sports is here. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app now. Sign up with the promo code FFF. Click the Rainmakers tile and opt in to get your first card free. Plus, play for millions in prizes all football season long while building the ultimate NFT franchise with Rainmakers football. That's promo code FFF. Build, play, win. Only at DraftKings. Contest entries depend upon type and number of NFTs held. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details.
You nailed that speed read at the end of it.
I was trying really hard, but in honest, it's because you did such a good job with that Geico read that I feel like it really empowered me.
Yeah, that's motivated you. You know what's interesting is, do you ever listen to podcasts on a speed other than normal speed?
Yes, I do.
All the time or
no, only some of the time. It depends on if I'm trying to be able to if I have a thing I'm getting to, I'll put it on 1.25. But usually I like living in the moment field. I ain't trying to rush through life.
Yeah, me neither, man. I never listen to anything other than one. However, I have a baby, as many people listen to this podcast know, and she loves the Apple Watch. Loves it. I mean, kids love anything that you love. Kids love as well. Yeah. And the number of times that she's texted somebody, not like a full-on text, one of those auto-generated texts, okay, thank you, yes, no.
Is there one that's gone to an uncomfortable contact in your phone?
It hasn't been too bad, but occasionally what will happen is I will text someone And then she will text like that person. The conversation is either over or they don't respond to my text. And then she'll send another text to them. And they're like, dude, sorry. Like I didn't have my phone for 5 minutes. My bad. Right. So then you're like, oh, well, sorry, baby's fault. Super cute though. Yeah. Anyways, there's also on my podcast app on the Apple Watch, you can touch the speed and next thing you know, 1.25. So
yeah.
For a moment there, you're on 1.25. Well done by you.
I was trying really hard about it. All right, let's talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Let's do it.
I'm really excited to see Trevor Lawrence this season. Excited to see him take the next step. Mike has talked about him and somebody that he really likes as a sleeper this year. But it does feel like, to me, I view Trevor Lawrence more as a streamer or a bye week fill-in to start the year. Where are you at on Trevor Lawrence in fantasy?
Yeah, so I've got him at quarterback 17, right where the ESPN consensus ranks are, and Mike has him at quarterback 16. So we're pretty optimistic and sort of in the same boat.
Yep.
A reminder that the reason why he's not inside a quarterback one tier is probably just as much. I mean, there are a couple of factors. He has something to prove, but also there's really good depth at quarterback. So quarterback 17 may look low, but I am excited about what's going to happen with Trevor Lawrence this season. Let's start with a really simple premise. Trevor Lawrence was considered by many to be the best quarterback prospect to come out of the draft since Andrew Luck in 2012. He was failed by his coaching staff last year. We all know that. We don't have to rehash the Urban Meyer era. It was a brief one for a reason. But if you go back and look at what the Jaguars were dealing with, here were the number 2, 3, 4, and 5 target getters for the Jaguars last season. Okay. Marvin Jones led the way, and we like Marvin Jones. He's a good, solid player, right? Yep. Number 2, Laviska Shenault. I like him as a prospect, but not the kind of guy that needs to be your number 2 just yet. Mm-mm. Number 3, Laquon Treadwell. Number 4, Dan Arnold.
Yeah.
Number 5, James O'Shaughnessy. Those were the 2 through 5 target getters for the Jaguars last year.
It's not good.
Right now, and we can, again, who cares about the price? I don't care about the price in free agency. It's not my money. It's their money.
That's right.
But the new group of pass catchers he'll be throwing to, the top 5 in my projections would be Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, Zay Jones, Evan Ingram, and Travis Etienne. That's an unequivocally better group than what he was playing with last year. So there's way more talent around him. He has an actual coaching staff that's working to get the best out of Trevor Lawrence. Year one to year two often represents a big jump for these guys. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of things I did like from last year. He was 5th in quarterback rushing attempts, 7th in quarterback rushing yards. He can use his legs. He's not part of the elite tier, the Kyler Murrays, those types. But he was a really good rusher in college as well, at 17 rushing touchdowns during his time at Clemson. In week 18 of last season, in a game against the Colts, in which the Colts needed to win to make the playoffs, he had his best game of the year to Trevor Lawrence. 23 of 32, 223 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not the kind of numbers that blow you away, but it was the play on the field that reminded us all, oh yeah, he's Trevor Lawrence. I'm optimistic this year. I've got him at 17, but I think there's a chance that he'll quickly emerge as the kind of guy that if you're looking ahead to bye weeks, you want to snag Trevor Lawrence because there are some really encouraging signs here.
Agreed. I'm fully with you there. Also, late season schedule bump. This is really late. But week 16, he gets the Jets. Week 17, he gets the Texans. Boy, oh boy, I would love to have that matchup in a fantasy championship. Quarterback taking on the Jets and the Texans. That would be incredible.
And Mike has reminded us several times here that the Jaguars have one of the softest schedules in the NFL this year. So he is optimistic about them as a team, in part because of who they play this season.
All right, we're going to talk about these running backs field, and I want to enter into this lightly because we got some news on Twitter that said James Robinson was expected to be ready for week one.
Yeah.
And I had asked you about it, and you said, well, that's not exactly what he had said, actually. As we jump into this, and we're going to talk about Travis Etienne, who we're thrilled about this year, but I want to start with James Robinson because I think a lot of this falls down from there. Based on what we had talked about before the show, Doug Peterson made some comments that said James Robinson could be ready for week one.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe got misinterpreted, you're telling me, as he will be ready for week one.
Yeah, I went back and watched the press conference to see the context of it and see how definitive Doug Peterson was in stating it. And my interpretation of his answer in watching it was he didn't commit to anything for week one. There's an expectation he could be ready for week one, but he also referenced the need to be smart and not doing too much with these guys right away, not having guys hit James Robinson right now. He ruptured his Achilles on December 26th, it's often, and Cam Akers is such an outlier, it's often a 9 to 12 month recovery. If he's on the early side, That's September 26th. Like, that would be, to me, that would be, that would be like extremely optimistic, right? So I am not banking on the certainty that James Robinson is going to be in the lineup in week one. Moreover, I do think that even if he is in the lineup in week one, or week two, or week three, that they're probably going to be smart about how they deploy James Robinson. And the last thing that I will say, Daniel, is we're going to talk about Travis Etienne here in just a minute, is that we all love James Robinson. He was one of the great waiver wire players we've seen in recent memory. So good in 2020 as an undrafted rookie.
You love seeing undrafted rookies make it
in the
NFL.
Such a great story. I hope the guy has a 10-year career.
Yep.
Travis Etienne's the real deal now, and he's a dude. He's a superb talent. So I'm a little bit lower than consensus on James Robinson, factoring in that I just don't know exactly how much work he'll get, even when he's fully healthy, because of Travis Etienne, and that it might be that he's not playing at full Voltron until week three or four of this season. Really good player and a valuable player to have on your roster, because if he gets healthy and something happens to Travis Etienne, we know what he can do. But I do think it's worth noting that the idea that he's definitely going to play in week one is not as certain as I think Twitter suggested it was yesterday.
Yeah, which is fair. Hey, who knew that Twitter could maybe be wrong every once in a while? We'll find out. But to your point, Travis Etienne being drafted quite a bit higher right now. ADP is running back 23. James Robinson ADP is running back 36. So there's a big gap between those two. Assuming James Robinson doesn't play, and even if he does play week one, how long until Travis Etienne just takes this job and makes it his?
Well, wouldn't surprise me if it happened during this season, that's for sure, and perhaps early, even though teams are very reluctant to make anybody like a true workhorse back down in and down out. But let me just start with a reminder of who Travis Etienne was in college. He had 78 touchdowns in college.
Holy crap.
78. That's absurd. And he played a lot less than 78 games, right? He was scoring like nearly two touchdowns per game. It was like 1.7 or something in college. The guy found the end zone all the time. As a matter of fact, he scored a touchdown in more games than any other player in NCAA history. So he's really good. He had 48 catches in his senior year at Clemson. The guy is the real deal. Him and Trevor Lawrence have an obvious connection. There's no doubt in my mind that that rapport in Clemson only helps. It can't hurt. But let's talk about the role. Kyle and I were going back and forth on this last night. And I know that this is something we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. But it's just worth reminding people that if you play in PPR scoring, if you can catch and they're going to throw it to you, you're a cheat code as a running back. I went back and I asked Kyle to look through players who had at least 150 carries last year and five targets per game, which if you play 17 games is less than 10 carries per game, right? I don't need him to get 15 or 20 carries. It's less than 10 carries per game and five targets a game. Five guys cross that threshold. Austin Eckler, Alvin Kamara, Leonard Fournette, Najee Harris, DeAndre Swift. Five top 10 backs last year. All right. So if you get 150 and five targets a game, you're going to be a super valuable player. Maybe not top 10, but I think top 20 for sure. Then I was like, you know what, Kyle, let's lessen the threshold a little bit, because 150 carries might be too optimistic. Five targets per game might be too optimistic as well. You take players with 100 carries last year and four targets a game.
Okay.
So 100 carries in 17 games,
yep,
is like 6.5 or 7 carries a game.
Not a lot.
Four targets per game. You can add the likes of Saquon Barkley, Aaron Jones, Cordarrelle Patterson, and Josh Jacobs. I just gave you 9 players that fit into that little criteria that I sent along. Of those 9, 8 of them were top 15 backs last year. Saquon Barkley was the only exception at running back 23.
Sure.
If Travis Etienne gets the receiving role that I forecast, he will be a top 15 running back this year. If he can get somewhere between 4 and 6 targets per game this season and stay healthy, he'll be a top 15 running back. There's just way too much value. He's so good with the ball in his hands that he's not going to be the kind of guy that just takes a dump off and then just gets tackled and you get, in the box score, 1 catch for 3 yards. He'll break off a couple of long runs this year as a receiver. Very excited about Travis Etienne.
So I want to say this. In our mock draft during the fantasy marathon, mm-hmm, Adam Schefter took Travis Etienne in
the 4th
or 5th round, right?
Yeah, you were going to take him instead.
I was going to take him. That's not the point. But yes, that was ridiculous. Yesterday, we did a mock draft.
Yep.
Travis Etienne went 45th overall. Right now, on ESPN, his ADP is in the 7th round. But in the drafts that we are doing with other industry people, Travis Etienne is not making it to us in the 7th round. That is just not happening. Do you think that it's okay to be able to move up and say, you know what? I'm going to target this guy. He's going to be my RB2. I'm going to have to take him around early based on what right now ADP is, but he is worth it for me to grab him at the back end of the 5th or the early part of the 6th, because in the leagues that we've done, he's not making it to the 7th.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I've got him as a top 18 running back this year, so I'm okay with it. I don't, maybe I'm just misconstruing what 4 targets per game represents. If I'm an offensive coordinator and I've got Travis Etienne, even with a deeper group this year,
yeah,
I want 4 targets a game for him. I want designed opportunities. I know that Urban Meyer is no longer the coach, but remember when after the draft, he made the comment about how they kind of wanted this joker role on offense, and he was heartbroken to not get Kadarius Toney, and instead took Travis Etienne. I think he can be Austin Eckler is too rich of a comparison because Austin Eckler is the man.
Yeah.
But he can be so useful if you cultivate opportunities for him every single Sunday.
I forgot that happened, that Urban Meyer was like, man, I really wanted Kadarius Toney, but guess what? That's got to make someone feel really excited.
What was the best thing Urban Meyer did as a coach?
Leave. He's no longer there. I think that's the best thing he's done for that team.
That'd be fair.
Let's talk about the pass catchers because Christian Kirk came over. Fields, you mentioned it. Ton of money. 4 years, $72 million. Real cash for Christian Kirk. But he's a guy that has never had more than 80 catches in a year.
Yep.
He's never had 1,000 yards in a season. Yeah. But they paid him like a real wide receiver. Is that a chance with Trevor Lawrence under center this year taking that next step? Is he a sneaky late round wide receiver that actually has more value than where he's being drafted
at? I don't know about more value, but I think he's got good value. He has solid value at ADP. His ADP right now amongst wide receivers is 36th. And a couple of things to note here. You mentioned the raw stats, which are accurate. Never 1,000 yards in a season. You know, played in a fairly crowded offense. DeAndre Hopkins was there the past 2 seasons. Larry Fitzgerald was there prior to that. AJ Green was there last season. Rondell Moore. I'm not saying that those guys were, you know, peak version of themselves, AJ Green and Larry Fitzgerald specifically, but still, a lot of mouths to feed in that Arizona offense.
Yeah.
Jacksonville made him not a priority, the priority in their free agency binge this offseason. So I do think that money is going to follow him a little bit as far as targets go. His targets could easily sail past 120 this year, and he could approach 1,000. I think he could go over 1,000 receiving yards this season as well. I feel bad for Christian Kirk, not because he gets $72 million over the next 4 years, but because his contract led to so many people being like, you gave Christian Kirk what? Like, hey, you know what? He earned it. And you are worth whatever someone is willing to pay you. So my hat goes off to Christian Kirk. So I'm optimistic on the quarterback. Less competition for targets here. And I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's a great player. I think he's a good player. So I'm okay with him going at wide receiver 36. If this Jaguars offense takes a step forward that I believe it will, and again with this schedule, I'm okay with it. There are some guys that are going in that same range as him. For those that are watching, you see Alan Lazard, Kadarius Toney, Brandon Ayuk, Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, Chase Claypool. Another reason why I like a lot of the wide receivers in that range right there, but he strikes me as one that has a chance to. He's the only one. Maybe we can flash that one more time. He seems like the best bet of those guys to definitely lead his team in targets.
I thought Alan Lazard could maybe, well,
he would be in that as well. But I think
you're right.
Of those guys you see right there, I think Christian Kirk is the best bet to definitely lead his team in targets.
I think you're right. I think you're right from that standpoint. And you had mentioned, I think you said wide receiver 39. His ADP has even fallen a little bit more now down to wide receiver 32.
Wow. 42. So, 42. Wow. How about that? Yeah. Good depth. Good depth.
Do you prefer Christian Kirk to any of the rookies that we saw on that screen? Like, would you take Chris Olave? Because when we know, I don't want to say we know what we get when you get Christian Kirk, right?
We don't know what we get. Yeah, I don't think we do.
You've seen 4 years of him, but they're still like, what's he going to be in this offense? But with Chris Olave, there is explosiveness. There is potential superstar ability. Would you rather have a Christian Kirk or a Chris Olave?
I would rather have Christian Kirk. Chris Olave is running in what has, for a couple of years, been a really, really thin wide receiver group, and all of a sudden is a very good receiver group. Michael Thomas, Jarvis Landry, him.
Alvin Kamara
would get his customary 100 targets as usual. So I would prefer Christian Kirk over Chris Olave. But nothing. It's not going to surprise me if Chris Olave outscores him at the end of the year. I just think based off of, you know, they're going at comparable values, I would prefer the guy that I think is good. Like yeah. Christian Kirk's good.
Absolutely.
And I think that he has a chance, a real chance, as I said, to 120 targets.
What about Garrett Wilson? I think I'd rather have Christian Kirk over Garrett Wilson as well.
I would as well. You know, it's early and there's, you know, got to sort of couch training camp buzz a little bit, but I haven't heard a ton about Garrett Wilson to suggest that like the automatic breakout is coming and there's the quarterback question mark there. So I prefer Christian Kirk to both of those two you just mentioned.
Agreed. Are there any other rookies that you would potentially like Treylon Burks or
Drake London? I like more
Drake London.
Drake okay. London's an example of a rookie that I like the most out of those wide receivers. And you could talk me into really any of them in the first round, but he's the one that comes to mind.
You know, what's going to be fun is in the next year or two, towards the end of this season, yeah. next season, these kids that are getting drafted as wide receiver 42. I'm excited to see what it is that this is such a deep wide receiver class. What are these guys going to be next year?
Well, we talked about Dynasty on the show yesterday, and if you're in a Dynasty startup right now, you're going to land a ridiculous wide receiver awesome. In like the 10th round of yep. your draft. Like there's so many good targets right now. The league has no shortage of awesome wideouts, and they're getting paid more than ever.
When was the last time that we talked about how, man, I like any of these wide receivers here, 42 through 46 feel like that's a,
it's, I mean, it's clearly the deep. Most, it clearly has the most depth in fantasy of all the positions. But I do think that we're seeing like another infusion of talent that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Agreed. All right, here's a question. Who is the fantasy hot ticket to success of these two teams that is not named Jonathan Taylor? And while you think about that, know that Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn your rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats. Life happens live. Phil Yates, is there one ticket that you like out of these two offenses, not named Jonathan Taylor, because that one's just too easy?
Yeah, it's Travis Etienne, who I just sort of waxed poetic on for a few minutes of not that long ago. So it is Etienne. I think it's between him and Michael Pittman, obviously, as the player that you would be choosing from. And I will just give the positional lean towards Travis Etienne. Running backs are just so valuable if you can find them. I think he's going to have a big season this year.
I agree with that. And I am willing to take him ahead of his ADP. I just want to say that one more time with where he is going. I'm okay drafting him ahead of the 7th round right now. All right, Field, why don't you go ahead and pay some of our bills?
You know, certain people like Travis Etienne just like to make life so much easier. I don't know what I would do without them. It's like you own a growing business and need to hire. ZipRecruiter makes hiring so much easier because they do the work for you. And right now, you can try it for how much?
Free.
At ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. You can easily review those recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply. Additionally, ZipRecruiter has a complete suite of tools that makes it easy to filter, review, and rate your candidates. In fact, the hardest thing you have to do is remember our special URL, ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. That's where you go to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/FFF. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We've all been there. If you ever fall asleep on the train and miss your stop or realize that you left your wallet at home or somewhere in the calf while in the checkout line, then you know exactly what it's like to make a rookie mistake, Field. We all make rookie mistakes when we're off our game, and sometimes we could use a little coaching. No matter where you play, Snickers is on the sidelines to get you back on your game. So if you've ever accidentally auto-drafted your number one fantasy pick, who of course is out for the season with an injury, then you know exactly what it's like to make a rookie mistake. Snickers has launched the Rookie Mistake of the Year sweepstakes to reward fans during the NFL season who share the rookie mistakes that they have made because maybe they just needed a Snickers. So go to Snickers.com/rookie mistake to enter for your chance to win. Snickers, official chocolate bar sponsor of the NFL.
Let's wrap things up with a little Caesars action, right? Where were they at for the number?
Oh, that's right. It was pretty low, Field. They were at 6.5, if I remember correctly.
6.5. I'm going to take the under 6. I'm optimistic about some steps forward. But you know what? Check that. The over, because I know that schedule is soft. Give me 7 wins for the Jaguars this season.
I'm going to take the over.
Okay, why not?
I'm going to buy into the Trevor Lawrence hype. We talk every year about this. Like these quarterbacks, come on. Hopefully it's Justin Herbert 2.0. That's what I'm hoping for here.
That would be sweet, huh?
That would be incredible.
All right, so yesterday we talked about Dynasty to close out the show. Today we're going to discuss non-PPR scoring, which as of like 5 years ago was kind of the way that a lot of people played. It has moved to PPR being the standard default setting here at ESPN. And in many cases, but we know a lot of you out there still play non-PPR. You know, we often discussed players, most of our analysis is tied to PPR value. We just discussed Travis Etienne. We just talked about Nyheim Hines, who, especially in the case of Hines, he has virtually no value in a non-PPR league. And Etienne's is depressed. But there's some other guys that have a significant change in value depending on what scoring format you are playing in. So, Daniel, as an example, and you are a non-PPR ranker here.
I am a non-PPR ranker.
You have Derrick Henry over Christian McCaffrey in your running back rankings.
I do, and I don't think that's all that crazy. Last 17 games in non-PPR points, Derrick Henry has 355.8 points. Christian McCaffrey, only 294.6. Mind you, this is last 17 games. This is not injured games, anything like that. That pass-catching ability is so big for Christian McCaffrey that when you take away those 90 points that he gets from catching passes, it can impact a player like him. And so when I talk about non-PPR rankings, I don't want to say that it moves someone up the board. It more moves someone down the board, right?
Okay.
But Derrick Henry is higher on my non-PPR rankings at running back than he is in PPR because he's not hurt as much by the pass-catching ability that he doesn't necessarily have as much within that offense. Whereas Christian McCaffrey's got to slide down the board for me because he's not going to have 1,800 yards rushing and he's not going to have 20 touchdowns and he's not going to have 400 touches at the end of the season. And so from that standpoint, when I'm looking at a lot of those guys, Derrick Henry is a great example of someone you move up the board in non-PPR and why Christian McCaffrey, in spite of the fact that he's a superstar, has to slide down the board just a little bit because of the gameplay.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, right? You're chasing touchdowns and you're chasing yards.
Yep.
And Christian McCaffrey's great value is not just that he has plenty of ups. I mean, listen, 294.6 points in 17 games.
That's still awesome.
It's still awesome, right? Yes. He's one of the best players, regardless of scoring format.
Correct.
He just moves down a little bit, but you're looking for guys that, even if they don't have a ton of targets, are going to get you the yards, and the next player, Nick Chubb, would apply in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, this is non-PPR is the perfect format for Nick Chubb because he's not faulted the way that he is in our PPR game. That's one of the things that we always talk about. Nick Chubb would be higher if he would just stink and catch passes in this offense. But in non-PPR, you don't have to worry about that. And he becomes more of a beast. He moves up from running back 14 in PPR to a top 10 running back in non-PPR because of that. Somebody that I think you can take a little bit earlier and not have to worry about the things that he doesn't do on the field because they don't affect you here.
Okay, I agree on that one. Nick Chubb has been awesome as a runner. And I don't think, by the way, it's not him not catching passes. It's the Browns just not designing and utilizing him in the passing game nearly as much. What wide receivers would you say gain value in non-PPR formats because they are not as dependent upon high volume catch totals?
Yeah, so you're looking at big play guys, right? And it's really easy to say this. You know, Jamar Chase is a top three wide receiver in either one, but he's the kind of guy that I talked about the other day. Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson have a ton of targets. They get a ton of targets, and because of that, they have a lot better chances to have more receptions. But Jamar Chase is the kind of a guy like Mike Williams, like Mike Evans, like Gabe Davis. These guys that don't have a ton of targets, but I'll tell you what, their go routes, their fly routes, they have. Mike Williams can have four catches for 156 yards and two touchdowns. And you know what that is? That's winning you your fantasy.
Mm-hmm, totally.
And so you don't have to have that kind of volume there. And PPR really, really boosts the value of guys like a Cole Beasley or a, not this year, but a Cole Beasley or a Hunter Renfrow or that kind of a wide receiver. And in non-PPR, I am avoiding those guys more than I am targeting them, and I'm going after some of these target-thin wide receivers because of the big playability.
Yeah, they just have more value in these formats. Guys that, you know, maybe are going to chase 100 catches this year, like you said, Hunter Renfrow, but maybe only 1,100 yards and four touchdowns. DJ Moore is awesome if he would ever score touchdowns. Not his fault, but his value has decreased dramatically because of that lack of touchdown upside over the past three seasons. Four touchdowns. I would say an important strategy thing that I'm mindful of in non-PPR scoring is I believe that the elite quarterbacks have more value in non-PPR than they do PPR for this reason, is that if you play in a non-PPR league, and Mike Evans could have, like, or he's probably a bad example, but there are guys who have big play upside, but also could have a week where it's like seven catches, which is great. 55 yards, not great.
Mm-hmm.
No touchdowns, also not great.
Juju Smith-Schuster, can he fit into that from like years past?
Yeah, I mean, old school Juju would have a ton of catches every single week, it felt like. But those quarterbacks, when your quarterback booms more consistently, when you get a 25 or a 28-point effort from Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, and the opposing player is still dealing with, let's say, Kirk Cousins as a starter, and he gets a 17, it's just harder to make up that 11-point gap elsewhere.
Totally.
because you don't have the catching aspect. So I'm a believer. I love to play PPR scoring versus non-PPR scoring for a very fundamental reason. It introduces way more players into the game.
Yep.
Right. And it's hard when you play in certain size leagues and you're like, wow, I'm really playing like the Browns fourth wide receiver this week because I have nobody else available in non-PPR scoring. I'd rather have a guy who, you know, it's uncomfortable when you win a game on Tuesday morning, but you still have, let's say, you win game 75-72 in non-PPR scoring. Not often, but on occasion.
It can happen.
PPR, just, I think there's something to be said for higher scoring affairs, right? That's just more fun. What do we prefer when it comes to football? People want to watch a 38-35 nail biter as opposed to a 6-3. Every time, what was it, like 3-4 years ago when the Patriots beat the Rams 13-3? When I bring that Super Bowl, people are like, that might be the most boring Super Bowl of all time. And I'm like, I was at the game and I was like, I was there covering the week and like, during the game, I was like, I mean, it wasn't lighting my world on fire, but I also wasn't bored, right? Like, I thought it was fine.
Sometimes good defense is fun.
Yeah, but then you realize that, you know, 38-35 really is more fun. It's dramatic moments. So I like more points. PPR introduces more points and introduces more players into the game. That much is for sure. Anything else strategy-wise for non-PPR you think is important to know or no?
No, I just think when you're looking at, I'll say this, it's important if you are playing non-PPR in a league, maybe you are normally in PPR leagues, right? But you're going to play in a non-PPR league with some friends, somebody asked you, make sure that you do a couple mock drafts because it's different enough that you cannot just draft a PPR team in a non-PPR format. And so I play in one non-PPR league and I always make sure that I do a couple of mocks because things are different enough that I want to make sure that I'm targeting the guys that I want. But there are some other guys in there, Tyler Lockett and Darnell Mooney, you know, Deontay Johnson we talked about. 1,000 yards for Deontay Johnson, 85 catches, but only 4 touchdowns. Tyler Lockett, only 947 yards and 4 touchdowns last year. Darnell Mooney, 1,086 yards, but again, only 4 touchdowns. When you are looking for guys to be able to really take your team to the next level in non-PPR, like you said, Field, it is touchdowns and it is yards, and that's what you got to target.
By the way, if you have other things you want to hear us talk about, whether it's different types of scoring systems, whether it's draft strategies, you name it, go ahead and tweet at Fantasy Focus. Jackson, who runs the handle, does an incredible job. We'd love to see that audience continue to grow. And we are here to help answer your questions. You can also get involved in the YouTube chat, which, as I understand, has become a lively community. I say as I understand because we can't actually be in the comments of YouTube while the show is taking place, but happy that the community is growing and buzzing day in and day out. And we'll take some YouTube questions.
I got some questions here from BSKY21 wants to know, Field Yates, would you rather have Chris Godwin coming off of an injury or DeAndre Hopkins coming off of the suspension?
Oh, definitely Chris Godwin for a couple of reasons. First of all, there's a chance you get 17 weeks of Chris Godwin. It's not a certainty right now, but there's been some recent reporting that suggests the Bucs feel really good about the possibility of Chris Godwin being available for week one. And then beyond that, right now, at this stage of his career, he's a better player than DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. And I guess we'll have to see after the injury. But last season, as we've talked about a million times now on the show, he was pacing well ahead of Mike Evans in both catches, targets, and yards. Mike Evans outscored him in terms of touchdowns because he's Mike Evans. But Chris Godwin, to me, would be a massive, massive, massive value if he plays all 17 games.
Agreed. 100%. And I am 100% with you. Faded Futures wants to know, do we have the same trust in J.K. Dobbins as we did before his injury last year?
I think so. And I have my antenna up on this one a little bit. Mm-hmm. A couple things here is that when a coach, and John Harbaugh said this recently, is still non-committal on J.K. Dobbins being available for week one of the season, what I'm not certain of, does that mean that if he's not available for week one, he could be available for week two, and then all of a sudden we're going to play him like we did pre-injury? The answer is maybe not. The other thing that I'm a little bit mindful of is that given that the Ravens just went through all this backfield attrition last year, maybe they're going to be as conservative as possible with these guys coming off of these injuries, J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. So those are the things that have me a little bit concerned on top of the fact that no running back since Lamar Jackson became the quarterback for the Ravens has had more than 250 receiving yards in a season. But the other part of this is that J.K. Dobbins is so good at football. And when he was a rookie, He was like first or second in the NFL in rush yards per attempt. So I'm willing to, it's baked into the ADP already. I'm willing to take him where he is because if he were healthy and he were definitely going to play all 17 games, he'd probably be going a round and a half ahead of where he's currently going.
Yep. All right. ARB wants to know, are you keeping Darren Waller for a sixth round pick? He's concerned about the hamstring injury.
Or
thoughts. It's just keeping, okay, are you just comfortable keeping
Darren Waller? I'm not concerned about the hamstring injury. I think I saw yesterday he returned to the field. It sounds like Darren Waller is going to be good. Shefty has reported previously it's not considered serious. I think the sixth round is like pretty much where he's being drafted, maybe a little bit behind where he's being drafted. So I would say yes. Like, I think if he goes back into the pool, it's not like he's going to go in the third round. So I'm okay with him being drafted, being used as a sixth round keeper.
Okay. This question comes from Spencer Thomas. Who do you like more in Dynasty, Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson? Which are the two rookie wide receivers?
So this is going to go back to just my pre-draft evaluation for them. I liked Chris Olave slightly better as a player, but that really is like six in one hand, a half dozen in the other, because they're so young. We have to see them as players, and I don't know that either one of them has a certainty at quarterback for the next 5 years. Jameis Winston signed a two-year deal to stay in New Orleans, and Zach Wilson, I think there's a chance he's really good, obviously. He was the number two pick in the draft last year, but didn't have a great rookie season, now dealing with an injury. I think it's too early for me to say that Zach Wilson is definitely going to be the quarterback for the Jets for the next half dozen or so years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like Chris Olave more, but I like Drake London more than both of them.
Yeah, it's a healthy conversation. To be honest with you, I'm not trying to cater to the crowd.
Uh-oh.
Jameis Williams is my favorite rookie wide receiver in Dynasty. Yeah, I just thought that from a pure talent standpoint, I thought this draft was solid. I know there were six guys taken in the first round. I don't think it was quite at the level that we were at the past two seasons, but I think from a pure prospect standpoint, overall football ability, Jameson Williams, was clearly the number one wide receiver in this year's class.
I am so pumped, Field Yates, to see DeAndre Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown,
yeah,
and Jameson Williams and TJ Hockenson with that offensive line out on the field all at the same time. Fingers crossed that we can get there. We can get there.
Patience is a virtue, my friend.
We can do it with Jared Goff, by the way. All right, Juan wants to know, Najee Harris or Dalvin Cook PPR?
I've got Najee Harris ahead of Dalvin Cook for a couple of reasons. A better overall workload. Last year, we saw Najee Harris lead the NFL in total touches and better reception upside. He led the NFL in terms of running back receptions last year. You can talk about the offensive line. I think it's probably going to be a better offense overall for Dalvin Cook, but Najee's volume is just way too good to ignore. It's close, huge, but I've got Najee over Dalvin.
I agree with you, and in part because everything you just said, and I know Dalvin Cook, unfortunately, is slated to miss 2 to 3 games a year. It feels like every season.
He's never played a full season, so
that's a part of that.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for our YouTube questions. We don't have any more, Field.
I have one last thing to say now that we bring up Najee Harris, just a cool moment that I saw yesterday. If anybody hasn't seen this yet, go check it out. I saw this. Love Mike Tomlin. I think Mike Tomlin would be, and I'm not trying to replace Commissioner Goodell, but I think if Mike Tomlin decided in his post-football career that he wanted to continue to stay in the game, I think he'd be a phenomenal NFL commissioner at some point down the line. I think the world of Mike Tomlin as a human, as a football coach. I saw a video yesterday posted by Jay Glazer. You probably already follow. It was one of the biggest football accounts in the world. And Mike Tomlin saw a group of kids near Steelers training camp, and they were kind of messing around, fighting outside of training camp, horsing around at like an unacceptable level. Looked like there was going to be. And so Mike Tomlin brings all these kids over. Got a big group of guys. Look, about 20 kids. And says, none of that. Come over here. And he and Najee Harris go over to the stepladder, and Najee starts to show off his footwork, and Mike Tomlin has the kids do footwork behind Najee Harris on the stepladder. Mike Tomlin's coaching each of the kids up, giving them some pointers, giving them some tips. It's easy for me to say we need more Mike Tomlins in our world, but they don't make that many Mike Tomlins. So just shout out you, Mike Tomlin. That was a really cool moment. And you mentioned Najee, and we have an extra minute on the show, so I figured I'd share that cool story. Go check it out. Jay tweeted it, and it's awesome. What a cool moment.
Good people. You know, we just need more good people in the world, Field. That's all that it
Mike
is.
Mike Tomlin is as pure as it gets.
I want to give a shout out to my buddies in a band called Me Without You. They're doing their final shows tonight and tomorrow. They've been a band since 2001. They run Tooth and Nail Records for a real long
time.
They have been doing this for a long time. They're ready to take the next step. But Me Without You, I just want you to know, my dudes, I love you guys. I'm going to watch a live stream. Cannot wait to see you. And if you're in the Philly area, make sure you go watch them, because they put on an unbelievable show. It is going to be so much fun.
about that? Tom Brady started in 2001. So they're kind of like the Tom Brady
they're like
of bands.
The Tom Brady of bands. I love that.
Brady hasn't retired yet, though.
We'll get there. We'll get there. All right. That's going to do it for us. We're going to be back on Monday.
Yeah, Mike, let's do preseason takeaways.
We're going to have a whole lot to be able to talk about. Me, Field, Mike Clay. Thank you guys so much for hanging out. We will see you guys on Monday. And don't forget to be good people to each other.
What he said. What are you doing this weekend?
I think I'm going to go down to the shore.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I'm going to play a softball game and then maybe do some poolside stuff.
That sounds absolutely incredible. If anyone's going to be in Chicago, I'll be at the event. We'll see you there. Talking fantasy football.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name. He's Field.